Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hello, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. I am really feeling the chill in the air today. I'm noticing that I actually got my sheepskin and I put it on my chair underneath me, and that I've been feeling like I wish the sun was a little bit warmer. I'm definitely feeling that change of seasons, and I'm wondering if you are too where you live. Maybe that's happening, and just really feeling the setting in of the season. We kind of went through, at least here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine, we went through that kind of tumultuous back and forth, mercurial almost energy of the seasonal transition the past few weeks. And it's still here. It's not like it's gone, but it feels like we're settling more into the season now. And I'm just wondering what it's like where you are. I'm wondering if you've been paying attention. If you listened to the How to Ease into Autumn episode from a couple of weeks ago, I know that was a pretty popular one. Just if you're noticing anything in your own body and in your surroundings and the landscape surrounding you, how the season is shifting and changing outside and inside. Curious how that's going for you. So today I'm going to be talking about non-hormonal birth control methods, specifically 5 different sort of categories of non-hormonal birth control that I think are primary options that all of us have access to, most likely wherever we are in the world, we have access to them. So I'm going to be sharing about those today. And I'm excited to share about this because I feel like it's something that is overlooked a lot, honestly, in the world. I think there's so much energy and focus on hormonal birth control, especially over the past, I don't know, couple of decades, past 20 years or so. There's just been this development of more and more hormonal birth control options. You know, it's not just the pill anymore. Now there's the hormonal IUD, and there's the patch, and there's the implant, and there's the shot. Like, there's all of these different options for hormonal birth control. And this is not to say that those are bad or inferior options. I think for many people, those are the best and easiest options for them. And there are many people, including potentially you, because you're listening to this episode. And also, if you're in my world, you're probably pretty naturally oriented. So the idea of living with these kind of synthetic hormones in your body for years and years and years, maybe decades, maybe 15 years, maybe 20 years, might be something that you're interested in transitioning away from if it's something that you've been using in your life. And or you might just be curious. Maybe you've never used any hormonal birth control and you're just curious about what the options are. Because I know for me, the last time I ever heard about all the options for birth control was in high school. I remember in middle school, in sex ed class, we talked a lot about different options. And then when I was in high school in my health ed class, we definitely went into a lot around sexually transmitted infections and barrier methods, condoms, and et cetera, all the different contraception methods and how important it was. And I know there are many places also that are really emphasizing abstinence only, meaning not having sex at all, not having any potentially fertilizing intercourse at all. And that is almost the entirety of the sex education around contraception, because contraception is discouraged. So no matter what camp you fall into, whether you're somebody who has been on hormonal birth control and you're wanting to transition off, or you're already off hormonal birth control and you're curious about your options, or you're someone who's never been on hormonal birth control and you just want to understand more deeply the options beyond the typical ones that you find when you do a Google search, or you're somebody who doesn't have any real sex education or contraception education and this is all new to you, you are in the right place. I'm going to be talking non-hormonal birth control options. Many of them are quite accessible no matter where you are on the planet. So I am excited to share with you. Before we dive in, I'm going to do the disclaimer that nothing that I share today is medical advice. I am giving you ideas and options and information and education for your own personal empowerment, for you to do your own research and to feel into what is true and right for you, because your body and your womb space always knows best. And if you have any specific conditions or concerns, find a practitioner or a provider that feels like a great match for you to support you. Okay, so today we are talking 5 effective non-hormonal birth control options, like actually in the literature showing that they are high levels of efficacy, almost as effective as hormonal birth control many times, especially when they're used in combination, but even on their own. So we're going to talk all about that today. Even if you have irregular cycles, even if you're postpartum and you're not cycling yet because maybe you're nursing and you have kind of lactation-induced amenorrhea, and or if you're perimenopausal and you're having irregular cycles. So what I'm sharing today is going to be relevant for any of those times in your life. And even fertility awareness, even cycle tracking is relevant during those times. In fact, I think it's even more important to be cycle tracking during those times, those unknown times, the irregular cycles, the postpartum, and the perimenopause, because that is when you just don't know. You just don't know when you're going to ovulate. And so it's very easy to have that surprise pregnancy. So actually being even more aware and more conscientious around contraception, if you're not wanting to have another babe, if you're not wanting to get pregnant, you're wanting to prevent it, is even more important in those times. So why though? Why non-hormonal birth control? I'm not going to go into, honestly, all of the risks of hormonal birth control. There are side effects. I would say, you know, the risks, there's risks in having synthetic hormones in your body for longer periods of time. I'm sure that you've heard at least a little bit about like blood clotting and potential future issues down the road. However, there's also the side effects that can happen from hormonal birth control, everything from potentially mood disruption, mood disorders, to acne, to pain. It's just depending on the person. Some people have absolutely no side effects whatsoever from hormonal birth control, and some people have a whole lot of them. So if you are someone on hormonal birth control right now, you can just really reflect. Think back to before you were on hormonal birth control and now, and see if there are any differences in your symptoms or your signs. That's a totally reasonable thing to do. And there's no pressure. I'm not giving you any pressure whatsoever to get off of hormonal birth control. I would never tell someone to do that. It's really just, if it feels like something you're curious about, there are options for you. There are many options for you. And if you are not on hormonal birth control, then absolutely, I think that exploring contraception and understanding how to prevent pregnancy is important. But why also would you maybe want to explore non-hormonal birth control? So when we're not experiencing those synthetic hormones, we are able to experience our natural cycles and receive the benefits of ovulation and progesterone. Progesterone itself actually has, that's what we experience it more at a higher level in our luteal phase, which is post-ovulation. And from post-ovulation all the way until we start menstruating, that's the luteal phase. And so progesterone is very high there, and it has a lot of lovely benefits on our body. And I actually have an entire episode all about how to tell if you're ovulating and why it matters, including all of the benefits, or many, many of the benefits of progesterone, that you can find at herbalwomb.com/episode5. It was the 5th episode that I ever recorded, so please be gentle with me when you listen. I think my delivery might be a little bit different. But episode 5 on Herbal Womb Wisdom, you will find that episode, and I talk all about the benefits of progesterone in there, and you can learn. You can learn if you don't already know. So those are really important, I think, for many of us, at least for periods of time in our life, to receive some of those benefits. And there is some protective benefit of us experiencing our cycling hormones. And then also, our menstrual cycles are a 5th vital sign. They are actually something that gives us information about our whole health, other systems of our bodies. How are we doing overall? If our menstrual cycles are irregular, if we're experiencing intense pain, if we're experiencing any kinds of mood issues, all of those things are giving us information. If we have heavy periods, if we have light periods, if we're skipping them, like all of that is giving us information about other systems in our bodies. So that's a pretty significant benefit of experiencing our natural hormones and our natural cycles in our bodies. Okay, so now that you have a sense of why you might want to consider non-hormonal birth control for some of the benefits and some of the potential avoidance of risk factors, I'm going to dive into the options with you. So first of all, it's important to know that this is really just an overview. I'm just going to be sharing the basics, some of the benefits, drawbacks, and risks of each of them, and some of the efficacy based on some of the research that's out there. This is not comprehensive. This is just kind of an overview of these different methods. If you want to use any of them, I'm just going to put it out there that please go and research it, educate yourself more, make sure that you feel comfortable with any of the methods and in a way where you can feel confident to move forward with it. Really, I'm just sharing these options so that you have more of a potential for an empowered and educated choice, for you to create, kind of curate in some ways, your own personal path to empowered contraception. I really believe that we all deserve to just have this knowledge, and that's why I want to put it out there. I want this resource to be out there in the world because I feel like this is something that I would have wanted to find, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago out in the world so that I could just have somebody tell me, oh, there's options even beyond what I find on Google. That's cool. How do I learn those things? So this is for you. So the five options are number one, copper IUD. That is one. It might be something that you've tried, maybe not. The number two is barrier methods. So that includes condoms, diaphragm, cervical cap, sponge. There may be other ones out there, but those are the ones I'm going to go over. Withdrawal. I know that is so controversial. The idea that withdrawal could even be contraception is totally controversial, but I am going to share with you why I'm including it because a whole lot of you are probably using it. Let me tell you that. It's actually so much more common than most of us are led on to believe. And the fertility awareness method, okay? Number four is fertility awareness method or other cycle tracking methods alone. So just working with fertility awareness or just working with cycle tracking. And number five is my favorite and my preferred path and something that I'm going to be teaching about actually next month. So if you're interested, please stay tuned for that. Is the path of what I consider to be natural contraception, which includes fertility awareness. It includes the foundations of fertility awareness as understanding our cycles, and then if needed, adding in other methods, right? So that might be adding in condoms during the fertile window. That might be adding in withdrawal if that's a choice that we're making. And or it might be adding in herbs and supplements, especially in our luteal phase, so post-ovulation, if we know that we had, a mistake happen and maybe we had potentially fertilizing sex, what are the herbs that we can choose to use to encourage our menstruation to happen? So I'll be sharing very, very briefly about that at the end of this episode. So before we dive into each of the specifics, I do want to talk about the difference between what is called, in quotes, perfect use and, in quotes, typical use. So there's a difference between when we're talking about perfect use of a contraceptive method, that essentially means that you are doing what is intended consistently and responsibly. So if that's, you know, for instance, with a condom, you are putting the condom onto the penis before there's any contact. You're also using the right size and you're making sure that there's space for the ejaculation to come out. Like there's all of the pieces around correct, in quotes, correct use or perfect use of the method. And so perfect use of the contraceptive methods is always a higher efficacy rate than typical use. Because typical use, yeah, maybe sometimes somebody puts on a condom a little later, or maybe sometimes somebody doesn't have the right size condom, or maybe you choose not to use it at all, and that's the only method that you're using. So these are more, in quotes, typical use situations, right? And so the efficacy, obviously, of those circumstances is going to be lower. So I'm going to talk about the perfect use and typical use for each of the different methods as well. So you can really consider what feels right for you, what feels like a good path for you. Maybe you want to combine methods. That can be a really lovely way to go. So most of these are DIY, as you can imagine, something, you know, when you're thinking about condoms or a diaphragm or a cervical cap or a sponge, or you're thinking about fertility awareness or herbs, that's going to be something that you are putting into practice yourself. That is something that relies on you and potentially communication with your partner or partners if you have multiple partners. So there's a lot of different ways this can look, and what is true and right for you is going to be different than what is true and right for somebody else. So really feeling into your own self, listening, understanding the levels of commitment and responsibility, and then making choices that feel good for you. That's important. All right, so here they are. Number one is the copper IUD. So I'll be the first to say I am not an expert in IUDs. I'm not a medical practitioner, as you know, and this is really not within my scope of practice to be working with IUDs. However, they are a non-hormonal birth control option, specifically the copper IUD. Yes, there are hormonal IUDs out there. That's a whole different world. We're not going to talk about that today, but the copper IUD itself is a non-hormonal form of an IUD. And it's very common. It's really, really common these days because there's so many people who aren't wanting the hormonal birth control. The copper IUD is sort of put out there as an option for folks that's also quite effective. So I wanted to bring them up. Essentially, these are IUDs. IUD is an intrauterine device, right? IUD, intrauterine device. That means that it's placed inside your uterus by a skilled practitioner. I actually have a picture of a copper IUD on the show notes page if you haven't seen one before, just to understand what that looks like. And so you can find that at herbalwomb.com/episode90. herbalwomb.com/episode90. You'll find a picture to the copper IUD and also some links to some other episodes that you might be interested in that are relevant. So the way that the copper IUD works is that the copper itself, so actually the metal, the copper metal, irritates the uterus. It irritates the uterine lining so that a fertilized egg would not be able to implant into it. And it also irritates the space so that sperm cannot survive in that environment. So it essentially is creating an environment in the uterus that is inhospitable to life. That's what's happening. And because of that, that can actually have some potential side effects. For some people, they don't have any side effects at all. And it's just amazing. It's an incredible option for them. For some people, it's like, set it and forget it. You don't really have to, it's not really messing with their hormones. For some people, that is true. They don't notice any side effects or any challenges. However, this absolutely is the non-hormonal birth control method that carries the most risks that I'm going to talk about today, because it is actually inserting something into your uterus that is hanging out there and that has effect, right? It has effect. So there are side effects like heavier menstrual bleeding, more intense cramps, possibly abnormal uterine bleeding, meaning bleeding during other phases of your cycle when you're not supposed to be bleeding. And for some, the body can reject it. It can actually be expelled without you knowing, potentially. There can be an inflammatory response in your uterus that just feels uncomfortable all of the time. And there's a potential for you to actually experience having an imbalance of copper in your body, even though that's not supposed to happen and it's supposed to stay localized. I've heard stories from several people that has happened, that they've actually had higher copper levels and that their zinc levels have been low. I don't know if that's in the literature. So I'm just putting it out there that is something that I have heard from clients and from friends that is possible. There's also more of a possibility of infection and potentially something called uterine perforation, which is very rare, but could happen. So there's these risks. There's these side effects and these risks that exist. And at the same time, there's so much that can feel really easeful about this method of non-hormonal contraception because there's no hormones being used. For some people, it just feels comfortable and it can be left inside for 5 to 10 years. This can be something that you experience having, you know, might be uncomfortable to have it actually put inside your uterus, placed inside your uterus. That can be an uncomfortable thing and you might have some response from that. But then after that, it might be something that you don't even notice for years and years and you really don't have to think about it. So that is something, that's a reason that some people might choose to use it. It's basically set it and forget it, right? And it's 99% effective. So 99%, meaning that pregnancy could occur, right? So like, of course, there's that 1% chance that pregnancy could occur, but it's unlikely. And so 99% effective is pretty much the highest efficacy rate of any of the hormonal birth, or any, sorry, not hormonal, of any of the birth control, whether it's hormonal or non-hormonal birth control. 99% is up there as one of the highest efficacies that exists, and the copper IUD has that. So that is one of the reasons that people choose it. For some people, it really just feels comfortable and easy, and they don't have to think about it. Now, of course, that's not going to offer you any protection whatsoever against STIs, right? Sexually transmitted infections, and those are a real thing. So if you're with new partners, multiple partners, there's any possibility of, you know, an active infection happening that could spread between partners, a condom is definitely a wonderful choice to blend into the copper IUD. So like I said, it typically doesn't mess with hormones. So you're probably still going to be ovulating and menstruating and receiving the benefits of ovulation and progesterone, etc. But for some folks, it can mess with hormones. It's not supposed to, but for some folks, it can. So I definitely recommend paying attention, really listening to your body, noticing what's happening. And for some people, it's just not the right match. Another thing to consider is that it typically is removed by a skilled practitioner, by a provider. So you would have to go into an office typically to remove the copper IUD. Now, like I said, it can expel itself without you even knowing. So it's good to make sure that it's in there if you feel like anything feels a little different. That's a helpful thing to consider. So really just listening to your own body, watching yourself, your own cycle for the effects that you're noticing. Every body is different. Your body and your womb are wise, and they're going to give you the information that you need as long as you are listening. Okay, so that's the copper IUD. Like I said, I'm not an expert on it, but it's totally something a lot of people choose because it is so easy. Number two is barrier methods. So I'm lumping them all together. I'm lumping the condoms. I'm going to talk about them individually, but I'm lumping the condoms and the diaphragm and the cervical cap and the sponge all together into barrier methods, even though they each have their own specific individual ways of working, because they all are essentially getting between the sperm and the egg somehow. They're often preventing the sperm from even entering the uterus in the first place. Sometimes they're killing the sperm, sometimes they're just completely preventing it, and these all require planning and use every single time, right? So every single time that you're going to be having potentially fertilizing sex, you need to be using your method. You need to be making sure that you are putting the condom on or using the diaphragm, putting the diaphragm in or the cervical cap or the sponge in order to make them work. Otherwise, they're not going to work, right? Because if they're not there, they're not doing anything. Okay, so number one is condoms. Condoms, to me, feel like one of the easiest methods of non-hormonal birth control, but many folks don't like them. I get it. The skin-to-skin is much more sensational and often much more enjoyable, and the condoms can be in the way. There are so many condoms out there, though. I really recommend exploring some of the options, especially if you're someone who has multiple partners regularly, or you have a new partner and you haven't gotten testing, or you have a partner who has an infection that comes up periodically, or maybe there's an active infection happening and you don't want to pass it between you. Condoms can be really helpful. So I think not only as contraception, but absolutely also because condoms are the only form of birth control. Whether it's hormonal or non-hormonal, that also protect from sexually transmitted infections. And sexually transmitted infections are a real thing. They are rampant in the world these days, and they transfer very easily. So condoms are something to consider, and there are many different brands out there. Something that is kind of nice about condoms is that they can be easily incorporated into other non-hormonal birth control methods, particularly something like fertility awareness. So with fertility awareness, you don't always have to use a condom because you're very aware of your cycle and you know when you are not going to get pregnant. You know that post-ovulation, once you confirm ovulation, there is no way biologically for you to get pregnant until after you menstruate again. So you know for sure you don't necessarily need to be using a condom. So if condoms are kind of a preferred method for you, that's something that you could work with during your fertile window and or in your follicular phase if you're not confident with your body's signs yet. More on this in a bit, but condoms can be incorporated into other methods to make them even more effective, is really what I'm saying. And then condoms are fairly effective on their own. So perfect use with condoms is up to 98% effective. That is huge, right? I said for the IUD, it's 99%. For condoms, perfect use, remember perfect use meaning you are doing all the things you're supposed to do to make them most effective, 98%. And then typical use is up to 94% effective. But of course, if you're not correctly using them, that can decrease into 85% effective, right? Because if you're not putting them on, they're not going to be effective. It also, this requires your partner's participation, right? So that person has to agree essentially to put the condom on. So depending on your relationship, depending on your connection to this person, whatever that feels like, this may or may not be the right option for you. And hopefully you have good enough communication with your partner that they realize that this is something that is important to you and something that you can choose together. So to make condoms most effective, they need to be the right size. So you need to measure the penis if you don't know the size, or you can try different sizes, but you don't want them to slip off or be too tight. Now, the person who is going to be putting the condom on can manage this. They can measure their own penis. Maybe they probably know at this point the size of their penis because they've probably explored it at some point in their life. That's one of those things that people do. And specifically, understanding that different condoms are different size. You can get different sized condoms. And so making sure it is the right size. You don't want it to be too tight and you don't want it to slip off. And then you have to put it on correctly. So it's before any contact between your vulva and the penis. You want to make sure that the condom is on, and you want to make sure that it's put on with space for the ejaculate to come out at the tip. And you'll see with the shape of a condom, if you want to practice, you could get a condom and you could practice on a banana, for instance, but you can just kind of make sure that tip stays out and you roll it down onto the penis and there is space at the tip for the ejaculate to come out. It's very simple and it can even feel sexy. Like this can be a part of the sexy experience. It doesn't have to be something that takes you outside of it. It could be just a part of it, especially if you've communicated beforehand that this is going to happen. And for latex condoms, this is something really important that not everybody knows. I think at this point it's becoming more common knowledge, but not everybody knows that you want to avoid oil-based lube or oils at all, vegetable oils, any kind of oils at all with latex condoms, because it can cause them to break. They actually break down in oil, the latex does. So if you're working with a latex condom, which many condoms are latex, I think it's like 80% that are out there are latex. So make sure that you're using a water-based lube, a water or a silicone-based lube with a latex condom, if that is something that you're doing. And there are other kinds of condoms too. So there are lambskin condoms. I know some people like those. Unfortunately, lambskin condoms do not necessarily protect against sexually transmitted infections. So that's something to really consider when you're making your choice around which ones. And then there are other synthetic forms of condoms that you can find out there, especially some people have latex allergies. And so that's something to consider as well. If you have a latex allergy, you want to stay away from latex. So these are the kinds of things you want to consider around condoms. But overall, they are a very effective form of contraception that is easy, accessible, not expensive. Even if you get a box of really nice condoms, it's still each condom itself is not very expensive. Yes, the lambskin condoms are much more expensive, but generally this is something that you can incorporate into your budget pretty easily. So risks of condoms are possible latex allergy, right? So you can find out if that's something that you have. For some people, they really do have sensitive vaginal tissue too. And so they need to seek out other condom material. And you're going to find one. You can find condoms that work for you, I promise. So that's a main thing to consider. Another risk is possible slippage, right? So that's especially if the condom is too big, then it could slip off, or breakage, right? So if you're putting that on and it's too tight or there's not space in the front, there could be a bursting or breaking of the condom. It's really pretty rare with appropriate use for any of those to happen. Also, something to consider are weird chemical lubes that might be on the condoms or spermicides that might be on the condoms. So look for those and try to explore non-toxic condoms, non-toxic varieties of condoms. But otherwise, condoms are a beautiful option, especially in my mind, to incorporate with something like fertility awareness and or herbs, a beautiful option. And especially if you've got those multiple partners, you've got sexually transmitted infection potential, any of that going on, condoms are something to consider, highly consider. Okay, now on to the diaphragm and the cervical cap. So I'm speaking about them together because they're kind of similar. Both of them are kind of these barrier methods. They're made of silicone typically, and they are actually fitted to your cervix. So by a skilled practitioner or provider, they are fitted to your cervix. The diaphragm is bigger, and then the cervical cap is smaller. It just kind of fits over the cervix where the diaphragm is wider. And both of them require spermicide to be effective. So you actually have to apply spermicide. Now, hopefully you can look for a non-toxic, the least toxic variety of spermicide out there. Spermicide is not something that I am an expert in. It's not something I've ever researched. And so this is something you're going to have to do on your own to try to figure out what works best for you. But there are less toxic spermicides out there with probably less additives and crappy things in there. So if this is an option that you want to go in the direction of, definitely looking into that, right? So you have to apply the spermicide into the cervical cap or the diaphragm, and then you place the cervical cap or the diaphragm up against your cervix, and you can do that hours before you have potentially fertilizing intercourse. So this is something that you can have in place and not have to worry about it in the moment. So that's one of the benefits of this kind of thing. Now, I don't know how popular diaphragms and cervical caps are these days. I know that they used to be. I know that in the generation of at least my parents, they were a really common thing in before birth control pill, before all the hormonal birth control came out. They were just like a really common thing. People were fitted for them. I don't know how much that's happening these days, but they still are an option that's out there. So if this is really something that you want to explore more of, it's something that you can ask your provider about. So they can actually, they can be up there sitting in there just kind of awaiting a sexual experience hours before it happens. So there's a real ease in that. But they have to stay up there against the cervix with that spermicide. They have to stay there for 6 to 8 hours afterwards. And the cervical cap, I believe, can stay a little bit longer. I can't remember exactly the amount of time that each of them can stay in the body. You do want to make sure you take them out because you don't want to leave them in. There's a risk of infection and different kinds of irritation. So you want to make sure that you do take them out eventually. But they do have to stay there for at least 6 to 8 hours so that they are essentially capturing, right? As many of the sperm as possible. So with perfect use of these, they are about 94% effective. And with typical use, more like 85%. So the diaphragm may be slightly more effective than the cervical cap just because of its larger surface area, and it doesn't slip out of place as easily as the cervical cap does. So that's something to consider too. But essentially, both of them are fairly effective, right? It's not quite as effective as the condom, certainly not as effective as the copper IUD, but they're definitely options and they're something to consider. And like I said, they do require spermicide, and that spermicide itself can have its own side effects or risks. There's a higher risk of infections, especially if your vaginal tissue is sensitive. There could be dysbiosis, meaning like killing off of certain bacteria and then it kind of being imbalanced in there. So you could have more risk of something like yeast infections or BV happening, possibly, and irritation in general. So there's certain things that can happen specifically because of the spermicide being in there. And making sure to take them out is really important so that you prevent as much of that as possible. And something to consider is that the diaphragm and the cervical cap have no protection from STIs. So if you were concerned about STIs, you could add in the condom, and then you could do condom and diaphragm or condom and cervical cap, and that would be really highly effective, right? Because you're adding in both of those. So you're really creating this space where contraception is very likely, right? So like preventing pregnancy becomes even more possible when you blend more than one of the methods together. All right, so now onto the sponge. The sponge is another option. It's also a barrier method that uses spermicide to work. It's actually available. This is something that you don't need to go to a provider for. It's something that's available at pharmacies or different stores. So it's simple and it's accessible. However, I will say that the sponge itself has spermicide in it. It contains spermicide. So it does have to be placed inside the vagina up against the cervix, and it has to be left in place for at least 6 hours post-ejaculation. But it can be placed up there up to a day before sex. And it can stay in there if you're going to have sex multiple times in a day, then it can actually stay in there and it will still be effective throughout that time. You don't want it to be in for more than 30 hours at a time because of course, the potential for infection and different kinds of irritation that can happen. But in general, it is something that is sort of easy. I guess you could call it easy because you just put it up there and then it's going to keep working. The efficacy rate, though, is much lower than any of the other methods. It's somewhere between 73% and 85%. So it's probably best as a combined form of birth control. In my mind, anything below 85% feels pretty low. So it is an option. It's something that's out there. It's something that's accessible. It's something you can go grab, at a store if you want to. It's fairly affordable. And it's something that you can keep inside for a day and feel comfortable doing that. Now, it does have spermicide, right? So understanding how that impacts your body, your vaginal tissues is important, and really listening to your body to see if this is something that you even want. So there are definitely potential side effects like vaginal irritation, infection, higher risk of toxic shock. So you just want to pay attention with any of the methods, right? With any of the methods, you want to pay attention and listen to your body. And with these ones that are just staying inside, that's definitely something to consider. And of course, this is not going to protect you from sexually transmitted infections either. Okay, so those are the barrier methods. Again, that was condoms, diaphragm, cervical cap, and sponge. Next up is number 3, withdrawal. I know, I'm thinking about how controversial it is to talk about withdrawal as a contraception method, because I feel like so many of us were taught earlier in our lives that, and maybe even now, that withdrawal is not a birth control method and we should never try it and never do it. And we're just going to get pregnant if we start using withdrawal as a method. But actually, withdrawal has an efficacy rate and it's pretty high. It's actually pretty high. It's actually, with perfect use, withdrawal is up to 96% efficacy. Now, typical use is more like 75%. So like I just said, anything that's lower than 85%, I feel like you probably want to be incorporating another birth control method with it to make sure that you're really going to be preventing pregnancy. But it's something to consider. If you have a partner who is really committed and really responsible and really responsive and is not going to just be really excited, and you two together are going to just desire for that ejaculation to happen inside you, to actually consider withdrawal to be a birth control method is an option. It is an option. And it's more effective. If used in quotes perfectly, it is more effective than the sponge for sure. And even potentially more effective than the diaphragm or the cervical cap. So it just requires serious communication and partner participation and commitment. One thing I will say is that one of the main concerns around withdrawal as being an effective method is whether or not there is sperm in the pre-ejaculatory fluid. Yep, pre-cum. Is there sperm in the pre-cum? The jury is out on it. I actually looked at the research. I actually went in and looked at the research on this. And it seems that in some studies, there may be sperm in the pre-ejaculatory fluid. And in some, there is not. So that doesn't really help us. It may be that there are some people who just consistently have sperm in the pre-ejaculatory fluid all the time, and some who just never have sperm in the pre-ejaculatory fluid. So considering that is a part of making an informed choice around working with this. In other words, there's risk involved. There's potential risk involved. However, if you start to learn your cycle awareness, if you start tracking your cycle with fertility awareness, and you just do not practice withdrawal during your fertile window, then it's much more likely that you'll be able to use withdrawal, let's say in the follicular phase. It just depends on who you are and what feels safe and what feels comfortable and what your risk tolerance is. But using something like withdrawal in the follicular phase before you start seeing your fertile window symptoms or signs is an option. So there's different ways that you can work with withdrawal to make it feel good and right for you. And it's absolutely something that is an option that a lot of people don't really consider, even though a ton of people are using it and are just shy and maybe ashamed of even sharing that they're using it. That said, there are ways to make it more effective. So for perfect use, to actually perfect, in quotes, perfectly use withdrawal as a non-hormonal birth control method, the ejaculate cannot end up anywhere near the vulva or vagina. Okay, so that cannot go anywhere near the vulva or vagina. Any hands, anything with ejaculate on them cannot go near the vulva or vagina. And if intercourse happens multiple times in one day, you have to wash the penis and also make sure to urinate and wash hands in between sexual activity to make sure that no sperm is sticking around. So those are ways to make it even more effective. And also, obviously, the withdrawal has to happen before any ejaculation comes out. Of course, there is going to potentially be that pre-ejaculatory fluid that's in there that's kind of unavoidable. But most importantly is making sure that the entire penis is out and the ejaculation begins once it is out of your vagina or your vulva area at all. So that would be perfect use of withdrawal. Obviously, there's a huge amount of communication and partner participation in this. And if that does not happen, then, and you're not using any other method, then you no longer have any method in place, right? So that's an example of why it's really important to have good communication and to know whether or not there's trust in your relationship and your connection and really feeling that sense of responsibility together, right? Feeling that sense of like, we are choosing not to get pregnant together so that in the moment, there isn't any confusion about what's happening. So really about, you know, having good communication, having good trust between the two of you, and really trusting your partner, right? And of course, withdrawal has no protection against STIs at all. Of course, yet another one, because we know that condoms are the only thing that protect us against sexually transmitted infections. I'm just going to keep saying that because it's a real thing. And it's something that I think for some reason people overlook a lot of the time. And like I said, withdrawal can be combined with other methods for even greater efficacy. So whatever that looks like for you, withdrawal could be in addition to, right? So let's say you're using a sponge and that has like an 85% or even less chance of being an effective contraception. You're also using withdrawal. That kind of combination could be a really good choice because you're adding in multiple different effective, potentially effective non-hormonal contraception options. But also you can work with withdrawal with fertility awareness. And I think that that's a lovely option for you too, if that feels right. All right. So now we're going to talk about fertility awareness alone. Number four, fertility awareness alone or other cycle tracking methods alone. Like you're just using fertility awareness. I'm not going to go into great detail on this, but essentially I want to make sure you know that you need to be committed to this method or whatever method you're choosing to truly understand your cycles in your body for at least 3 to 6 months before starting to use them confidently as contraception, because you have to get to know your particular signs. Like your body has specific fertile mucus. You'll notice that your cervical fluid might be different than what the in quotes textbook fluid looks like. Like your dry days might be different than someone else's. You might still have moisture there. Really getting to know what you, and your temperatures might be different. So really getting to know your body and your cycles and understanding how long your luteal phase even is or how long your follicular phase typically is, which it can change, and understanding that your follicular phase can change from cycle to cycle is really important. So there's a lot to learn around fertility awareness. So if you are new to it, it is basically just tracking your basal body temperature every day, your cervical mucus every day, and then optionally your cervical position every day. And you're learning to determine when your fertile window is so that you're either using a barrier method or some other non-hormonal contraceptive method during that time, or you're abstaining. You might be abstaining from sex completely or from potentially fertilizing sex completely, because of course there are other ways of having sex that don't involve intercourse. So whatever that looks like for you during that time, during that fertile window. And then outside of that fertile window, getting to know your body so that you know, oh, post-ovulation, you can actually have unprotected intercourse during that time, because there's no biological way for you to get pregnant after you've ovulated and before you've menstruated during your luteal phase, assuming you actually have ovulated and you can confirm that. So there's rules of fertility awareness. I'm going to definitely be sharing a lot more about those in my natural contraception course coming up. And this is something that you can also learn on your own if you're interested in that. I learned it on my own. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, you need to learn with a practitioner or with a provider or somebody that you can ask questions to. I think that's really awesome. There was nobody doing that when I learned it. I didn't know anybody doing that. So I had to learn it on my own. So I learned it through my cycles, but it took me years. It took me years to really start to trust my cycles and to understand how to work with them more effectively. If you want to do it in a faster fashion, then definitely working with someone to help you is a good idea. So, of course, there are other ways to cycle track. I'm sure you've heard of them. There are apps out there. You can use LH strips, which can potentially tell you when you're ovulating. Or there's some methods out there that just use temperature. Just, I think it's called the Billings method, might just use temperature. And then there's some that just use cervical mucus. I believe that the most effective form of cycle tracking for contraception is going to be the fertility awareness method, which incorporates all three of those signs. Particularly at least the basal body temperature and the cervical mucus. Those two are necessary. Those are essential in my mind to really be able to confirm ovulation and the fertile window. And then potentially to also be paying attention to your cervix, because the cervix position can tell us a lot, whether it's open or closed, whether it's lower or higher, if it's soft or if it's hard. Those things all give us information. So starting to learn those signs is also helpful. And it's also just kind of cool to get to know your body in that way and to pay attention. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the statistics on fertility awareness in terms of their efficacy. And I think you're going to be a little shocked. So fertility awareness, when used in quotes perfectly, is up to 98% effective. Yeah, it's a real thing. It's pretty much as effective as condoms and almost as effective as the non-hormonal IUD. And that's a big deal. It is a big deal. So actually with perfect use, fertility awareness can be an incredible non-hormonal birth control, but perfect use also means either using a barrier method or abstaining during your fertile window. And sometimes that's hard. So more typical use is around 85%. Of course, fertility awareness also doesn't offer any protection against STIs, of course. And for it to be truly effective, you have to be consistently tracking. But it can be used postpartum when you're not even bleeding yet, when you're not even menstruating, and you're not even ovulating yet. You can start tracking yourself. You can start tracking your signs and your symptoms, and you can start seeing if you're starting to create any fertile mucus. If your temperature is changing at all, you can just start to pay attention. You can even start tracking now, even if you're newly postpartum. And if you're perimenopausal, it's a beautiful time to be tracking your cycle, to really just get to know what's happening in your body. And if you have irregular cycles, again, our cycles are a vital sign. So if you do want to learn more about your cycles being a vital sign, I have a whole episode on that, herbalwomb.com/episode38. Tells you all about what that means and just the concept of it. But truly, because of that, tracking your cycle in this way, where we're really paying attention to the signs, and then we can also symptom track alongside it, this gives us so much. It's just an incredibly empowering foundation to have of your own body. I'm clearly a big advocate for it. Okay, so that is fertility awareness alone. It obviously has a high efficacy rate. But then if you're not practicing it perfectly, what else can you do? This is where number five comes in, which I believe is, I'm going to just say it, I think it's a superior method to all the non-hormonal contraceptive methods, a combination, right? So you can combine, certainly you could combine if you wanted to do the sponge and the condom, you can combine those. Those are going to be great. But if you wanted to do non-hormonal and as natural as possible of a direction, you can combine fertility awareness, potentially with barrier methods or abstaining during the fertile window, and then if needed, adding herbs in to help you menstruate or to help to encourage bleeding in the luteal phase. But in order to work with herbs effectively, you need to know your cycle. You just do. Like, it's just a reality that herbs will not be as effective. Like, you see out there and people are like, oh, wild carrot, or oh, you can use amenagogues. Yes, sure, you can. But honestly, if you don't know if you've ovulated, if you don't know when you're expecting your menstruation to be, your bleeding to be, then it's not going to be helpful. Like, the herbs are not going to help as much. When you're working with your body and with the herbs can nudge you in the direction of preventing pregnancy and releasing your blood versus you just kind of like working against the cycle that's happening in your body and it doesn't really make sense. So working with herbs effectively, you need to be tracking your cycle. It is the foundation. The foundation is cycle tracking. So considering that, you're going to be tracking your cycle. And then if needed, if for some reason you end up having potentially fertilizing sex during your fertile window, you can add herbs in. One of the categories of herbs that you might add in, especially post-ovulation, is something called implantation inhibitors. So I'm not going to go deeply into each of these categories, but wild carrot is an example of an implantation inhibitor. And there's a very specific way to work with wild carrot with specific dosages and timing. But just to say, that is one of the categories. Another category that you might work with is progesterone in quotes blockers. So possibly things like high doses of vitamin C. What's interesting about that is that lower doses of vitamin C seem to increase progesterone levels, but high doses seem to lower progesterone levels. And so actually kind of bringing down the progesterone level so that your body is not trying to maintain a potential pregnancy can possibly be helpful. Then there's warming circulatory stimulants with an affinity for the uterus. So that's another category where things like dung quai or ginger can potentially be herbs that are incorporated here. And then there's amenagogue herbs, what does that even mean? But basically herbs that help to bring on menstruation. There's a lot of different ways that that works, but herbs like mugwort or motherwort or cottonroot are all examples of amenagogue herbs. And essentially, they help to encourage bleeding to happen. So you want to make sure, like I said, that you're working with these herbs at the right time. So you absolutely need to be understanding your menstrual cycle. You need to know that you're post-ovulation. You need to know, okay, well, my luteal phase is usually, 14 days. So I'm like starting to work with these earlier on. And start to cultivate relationship with these plants too, even before you're doing this, just to have a sense, like to help your body to remember what to do so that you can really work with them effectively to encourage your menstruation to happen. And you want to understand the dosages. You want to know what will be effective for your body. What specifically, what herbs are helpful for the body that you have, your energetics, really starting to match the herbs with your unique body, understanding how to work with the herbs effectively with the cycles. It's a whole kind of world unto itself. But to me, this is the most empowering form of non-hormonal birth control. The fertility awareness, and then our choice of non-hormonal method during the fertile window, and then working with herbs if needed. To me, this is ancestral knowledge. This is the wisdom of our womb that has been passed down over many generations that we have completely lost our thread to, and that very likely some of our grandmothers and grandparents and that whole lineage that we've had over the years probably had some awareness, probably even paid attention enough to their own cycles that they even managed and understood their cycles enough to work with herbs more effectively with their cycles. Really, I just feel like this is something all of us should have awareness of, whether or not we choose to actually use it in our lives, just to know that this is a possibility, to know that you can get to know your own cycle You can get to know your own menstrual cycle. You can get to know your hormones to such an extent that you have an awareness of when you are potentially fertile. And then you can make an empowering choice of what method of contraception you would like to use during your fertile window. And that you actually have plants and allies and supplements and support that you can incorporate into your luteal phase if needed in order to encourage bleeding if that is necessary. This is, to me, empowered womb connection. This is true natural contraception. And it's what I've been doing for the last 15 years in my own body. So all this to say that you have options. You have options. Non-hormonal birth control is available to all of us. It doesn't mess with our hormones, except maybe the copper IUD. But typically, non-hormonal birth control is not impacting our hormones at all. And it's not something we need to go to the gynecologist or PCP for unless we're getting fitted for a diaphragm or a cervical cap, but typically, or the IUD, but typically, like a lot of these non-hormonal birth control options, we have access to. These are accessible options, and you can take your body, your cycles, your rhythms, and your fertility and your contraception into your own hands. Like, you have choice. You can craft your own personal contraception path, individualized to what feels best for you and potentially your partner. And you can start now. You can start now. Okay, friends, that is all for today. I hope that this has been informative and helpful for you and that it just gives you kind of a foundation of understanding of your options so that you have awareness. You have awareness of the benefits, the risks, the efficacy rates. Like, you can make informed choices. To me, informed choice is one of the best things we can have and do in our lives. And we deserve it. You know, we deserve the information so that we can make those choices. So show notes are at herbalwomb.com/episode90. You can go there and see links to other episodes that are relevant. The link on the episode on your cycle being a vital sign, on how to tell if you're ovulating and why that matters, and also one on irregular cycles. I put all of those up. I also put a link up to the wait list for my natural contraception program that is happening in a few weeks. So if you want to get on that wait list, you can either go to the show notes page or you can go directly to the waitlist page, which is at herbalwomb.com/class. herbalwomb.com/class. I almost didn't share about that. And I almost didn't because it is such an edge for me to be actually offering something that's a group program. I've been doing a lot of one-on-one work and I've taught in classes in person, but to do this online and to offer this really deep and potent information that I've been embodying for many years and that is an edge, you know, it's an edge for me to offer something online. So it's going to happen in a few weeks. I'm going to be offering the natural contraception program and I'm going to be diving much more deeply into how to understand your cycles, how to understand your body, your anatomy, your hormones, just basics on that, getting that foundation so that you can work more effectively with the herbs. And I'm going to talk about all the herbs too. So there's a lot coming on that. I'm sure I'll share more about it on the podcast. But if you want to be on the wait list to be one of the first to hear about it, then definitely sign up at herbalwomb.com/class. And otherwise, if you loved this episode, if you know anyone who would benefit from hearing about non-hormonal birth control options, share this episode with them. Share it with them. That could be in a DM. That could be in a text message. That could be publicly on social media. And if you do share it on social media, definitely tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom. Love that. And yeah, that's all I have for you today. I hope that you are having a beautiful entry into fall if you're in the Northern Hemisphere and an entry into spring if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful we're here together. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with me today. It's been a real pleasure and it is always an honor. It's always an honor to hang out in your ears, to connect with your heart, to connect with your mind, to support you in your personal journey to womb reconnection and earth reconnection. Like, I love that we are weaving this reality together. We are weaving a world together where we are more connected to each other, to our own wombs, to our own inner wisdom, to the earth, to the seasons. There is so much possibility. So until next time, live well, connect deeply, and have a beautiful rest of your day.